From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Nearly 8 years after he was dragged from the presidential palace at gunpoint by French troops, the former president of Cote d'Ivoire, Laurent Gbagbo, was declared not guilty by the International Criminal Court of all charges that followed from the 2010 presidential election. According to the Constitutional Council, which under Cote d'Ivoire's constitution was the final authority on election outcomes, then incumbent President Gbagbo had won the 2010 election over the former IMF official Alassane Ouattara. Nevertheless, Western countries, including the former colonial power France, disagreed, and Ouattara was installed and Gbagbo arrested. This was the court at The Hague issuing its final determination on the case on Tuesday.
The majority of Trial Chamber 1, Judge Herrera Cabucho dissenting, notes as follows. First, it is a matter of public record that in the period under scrutiny by the Chamber, i.e. November 2010, April 2011, Ivory Coast was torn by a violent political conflict in the context of the presidential elections in Abidjan and in other parts of the country. On June 23, 2011, the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court requested authorization to investigate whether crimes within the jurisdiction of the court were committed in the context of this conflict. And on 3 October 2011, Pretrial Chamber 1 of the International Criminal Court authorized such investigations. Following requests by the Office of the Prosecutor of 25 October 2011 for Mr. Gbagbo and 12 December 2011 for Mr. Bligodé, Pretrial Chamber 1 issued warrants of arrest against the accused on 23 November and 21 December 2011, respectively. Mr. Laurent Gbagbo was surrendered to the International Criminal Court on 30 November 2011 and Mr. Charles Bligodé on 22nd March 2014. The charges against the two accused were confirmed by Pretrial Chamber 1 of the ICC for Laurent Gbagbo on 12 June 2014 and for Charles Bligodé on 11 December 2014. Following the joinder of the two cases and the period for its preparation, the trial commenced on 26 January 2016 before this Trial Chamber 1. The chamber set for 231 hearing days, receiving evidence from 82 prosecution witnesses in court and through video link. Thousands of documents were submitted into evidence. Hundreds of submissions, motions, requests by the parties and participants, and decisions by the chamber were filed. Following the conclusion of the presentation of evidence by the prosecutor, the chamber was seized of requests for the acquittal and immediate release of both accused. Pending the resolution of these requests, the chamber convened a hearing to discuss the continued detention of the accused on 13 December 2018. During this hearing, both accused asked to be relieved with or without conditions. The chamber, having thoroughly analyzed the evidence and taken into consideration all legal and factual arguments submitted both orally and in writing by the parties and participants, finds by majority that there is no need for the defense to submit further evidence, as the prosecutor has not satisfied the burden of proof in relation to several core constitutive elements of the crimes as charged. In particular, the majority finds that the prosecutor has failed to demonstrate that there was a common plan to keep Mr. Gbagbo in power, which included the commission of crimes against civilians, has failed to demonstrate the existence of the alleged policy to attack the civilian population on the basis of the alleged pattern of violence and other circumstantial evidence cited in support, has failed to demonstrate that the crimes as alleged in the charges were committed pursuant to or in furtherance of a state or organizational policy to attack the civilian population, has failed to demonstrate that public speeches for Mr. Gbagbo or Mr. Blegoudet, by Mr. Gbagbo or Mr. Blegoudet, constituted ordering, soliciting, or inducing the alleged crimes, or that either of the accused otherwise knowingly or intentionally contributed to the commission of such crimes. The chamber will provide its fully and detailed reasoned decision as soon as possible. The chamber recognizes that it would have been preferable to issue the full decision at this time. However, Rule 144.2 of the Rules of Procedure and Evidence states that the chamber must provide copies of its full decision, and I quote, as soon as possible after pronouncing its decision in a public hearing, and there is no specific time limit in this regard. The majority is of the view that the need to provide the full reasoning at the same time of the decision is outweighed by the chamber's obligation to interpret and apply the Rome Statute in a manner consistent with internationally recognized human rights as required by Article 21.3 of the Statute. Indeed, an overly restrictive application of Rule 144.2 would require the chamber to delay the pronouncement of the decision pending completion of a full and reasoned written statement of its findings on the evidence and conclusions. But given the volume of evidence and the level of detail of the submissions of the parties and participants, the majority, having already arrived at its decision upon the assessment of the evidence, cannot justify maintaining the accused in detention during the period necessary to fully articulate its reasoning in writing. The deadline for appealing the present decision will start running at the moment the parties are notified of the full reasons for it. The prosecutor may seize the chamber of a request under Article 81, 3 C, little I, as of today. For all these reasons, the chamber by majority hereby decides that the prosecutor has failed to satisfy the burden of proof to the requisite standard as foreseen in Article 66 of the Rome Statute. Grants the defense motions for acquittal from all charges against Mr. Laurent Gbagbo and Mr. Charles Blegoudé. Orders the immediate release of both accused pursuant to Article 81.3. No! Come on! Please! Can you... Please, I appeal to the public. Please sit down. Otherwise, I have to evacuate. Please sit down and please behave. Okay. Ordered the immediate release of both accused pursuant to Article 81.3C of the statute, subject to any request by the prosecutor under subparagraph little I of this article.
That outburst that was heard in the court when the verdict was announced came from supporters of the former president. According to the Associated Press, his supporters had also been singing and dancing outside the courthouse and in the streets of the capital of Cote d'Ivoire, Abidjan. The former president is considering whether or not to run again for the presidency, according to Reuters. If that happens, the sitting president, Ouattara, may run, although he had announced in August that he would not. This past Friday, some of the other war zones around the world, including Yemen, Syria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Central African Republic, Libya, and Ukraine, were discussed by the spokesperson for the UN Secretary General, Stéphane Dujarric, at his daily press conference.
Good afternoon. Happiest of Fridays. I'll start off with a humanitarian note on Yemen. The Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs, Mark Lowcock, and the Executive Director of the World Food Program, David Beasley, today announced that $32 million will be allocated from the Central Emergency Response Fund to help scale up life-saving operations in Yemen. The funds will allow WFP to ramp up humanitarian logistical operations, including increases in humanitarian air cargo, transport more humanitarian workers, provide more accommodation spaces, including in Hodeida, and expand emergency telecommunications. The funds will also support the work of the UN agencies as well as NGOs engaged in the humanitarian relief operations. Mr. Beasley said that the World Food Program is going to help 12 million people a month, up from 8 million currently. Mr. Lowcock said that to avert the worst in Yemen, all parties to the conflict must facilitate rapid... Mr. Lowcock said that to avert the worst in Yemen, all parties to the conflict must facilitate rapid, unimpeded passage of humanitarian relief for civilians in need. They both welcome the recent decisions taken in Sana'a to provide more visas for humanitarian workers, to investigate allegations of theft of food aid, and to punish those responsible, as well as to ban the sale of food aid intended for Yemenis with no income, and to put in place more effective targeting and monitoring systems. Excuse me. Turning to Syria, the special envoy for Syria, Geir Pedersen, had good meetings with the International Syria Support Group task forces yesterday, focusing on humanitarian issues in Rubkan, Idlib, and Northeast. He remains committed to the protection of civilians and expressed deep concern about the attacks on humanitarians. He said he was pleased to hear from Russia and Turkey on their sustained commitment to maintaining stability in Idlib. As directed by the Secretary General, the Special Envoy continues his consultations with concerned parties within and outside of Syria towards a peaceful solution and the implementation of Security Council Resolution 2254. And today, the UN Refugee Agency said it is deeply concerned by reports of mounting civilian casualties, including many women and children, and large-scale civilian displacement amid renewed fighting in the Hajin enclave in Deir ez-Zor governorate in the eastern part of the country over the past 6 months. Clashes and airstrikes in the southeast part of the governorate forced 25,000 people to flee, as well as women and children. Many elderly people are at risk. And an estimated 2,000 people remain in the conflict-affected areas of Hajin. Those fleeing report increasingly desperate conditions with diminishing services and extremely high prices for basic food. We're all worried for civilians who continue to be trapped in the Daesh-held areas. And this morning, the head of the UN peacekeeping mission in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Leila Zerugi, briefed Security Council members following yesterday's announcement of the provisional election results, focusing on the ongoing electoral process, which she said was in the final stretch. She commended the Congolese people for exercising their democratic right to vote and for their commitment to the political process. The Secretary General's representative said the coming days will be critical to the conclusion of the historic electoral process, adding she will continue to engage with all Congolese stakeholders to reinforce the need for calm and recourse to established judicial procedures. Her full remarks are online. And our colleagues at the UN peacekeeping mission in the Central African Republic have just told us that they are on the ground there. The mission is conducting operation to restore order in Bambari in Waka Prefecture in coordination with the Central African Republic's own security forces. The operation was launched yesterday in response to ongoing attacks by the armed group UPC against the local population and peacekeepers. According to our peacekeepers on the ground, UN troops seized weapons and lethal equipment and removed barracks. The mission strongly condemns violence against civilians and calls on all parties to engage in dialogue, especially within the context of the upcoming African Union peace talks in Khartoum on the 24th of January. And the UN Humanitarian Coordinator for Libya, Maria Ribeiro, has today expressed deep concern over the escalation of hostilities in the eastern city of Derna and the consequent further deterioration of humanitarian situation in parts of the city. Intense fighting recently resulted in substantial civilian casualties in Derna and the deterioration of infrastructure and services, as well as civilian population lacking access to basic needs, including food, water, and urgent life-saving medical care for the wounded. Ms. Ribeiro called for unconditional, unimpeded, and sustained humanitarian access to the affected civilians in the old city, and urged all parties to the conflict to take all measures to protect civilians and civilian facilities and to strictly follow their obligations under international humanitarian and human rights law. And the UN Resident Coordinator for Ukraine, Osnat Lubrani, said she's concerned about three water workers being injured after their car came under fire in the country's east. Ms. Lubrani said it was unacceptable that water workers face lethal risks in carrying out their normal duties and ensuring that water continues to flow to millions of people. This latest incident brings to 11 the total number of water workers injured in the past 9 months. Ms. Lubrani stressed that any targeting of civilian workers or infrastructure or intentional disruption of access to water supply and heating systems is a clear violation of international humanitarian law. I pause here before turning over to Monica.
Thanks, Steph. My question is about Yemen and three things. The first one, could you confirm if the talks are going to take place in Jordan or not? And when, if you have now a date? And the second point regarding the Yemeni government is saying that they are not going to go to talks unless they have control over Hodeidah. So, can you elaborate on this? What's your standpoint regarding this? And as for aid, you have Mr. Lokak, when he talks 2 days ago, He said that about 5% or about 95% of that aid gets to the right people, but about 5% is not getting to the Yemeni or the people in need. So which measures are you taking now to make sure that you are getting there? Thank you.
Sure. Let me take your question in the in the reverse order. In discussions with the authorities in Sana'a, our humanitarian colleagues were pleased to know that they are increasing, that they've banned the sale of humanitarian aid that is meant for those who receive no income. There are increased procedures that will that have been agreed to by the government, I think, including biometrics, which helps us track track the aid, and investigations will be going on. I think when you're distributing aid in what essentially is a conflict zone, there will always be some issues about aid getting to the right people. It is the responsibility, our own responsibility, in partnership with the local authorities to ensure that those in need get the aid. I think there is something particularly atrocious about stealing humanitarian aid for those who need it the most. Your second question, you know, Mr. Griffiths is been traveling around. He's also talking to the parties as well as every staff. Mr. Kammert is very much engaged on the ground in Hodeida in trying to operationalize the Stockholm Agreement. What is important is that all the parties cooperate with the UN to help move the process forward, to ensure that, you know, the relative calm that we see in Hodeida can be solidified, spread to other places in the country, because that's something we've been calling for quite some time, and engage in the political process that Mr. Griffiths is leading. I'm not able to confirm any dates on talks. I think we've seen various reports. I would disregard those reports if I were you. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Stefan. I know it's UNHCR, but can you confirm that the Saudi woman in Thailand was granted asylum by Canada? That's what
Again,
the Thai officials are saying.
I mean, I haven't gotten any update from UNHCR. We can give you their number here, but I cannot confirm. Mr. Bays.
It's a follow-up on Yemen talks. The special envoy, I'm told the Security Council in consultations that the next stage, even though there may be talks on prisoner exchange, potentially in Jordan, the next stage of the political talks now have slipped until February. Is the Secretary General concerned about a loss of momentum in this process?
What the Secretary General would like to see is the consolidation of what we've been able to achieve in Hodeida, the parties working closely with Mr. Kammert to live up to their obligations and to operationalize in Hodeida. This has been a long road, a lot of ups and downs. I think we're pleased with what is happening right now, but we need to move forward. We need to solidify what is happening on the ground. We have our responsibilities. All the parties involved have their responsibilities, as well as those who have influence on the parties involved.
Thank you, Stefan. I asked yesterday about this letter from the Moroccan permanent representative, and I saw the letter. It contains some alleged violations by Polisario in the Gergerat area. Can MINURSO or the UN confirm those violations? And I have a question also whether you have any comment on the start of the U.S. Troops withdrawal from Syria. Thank you.
No, I don't have a particular comment on that. On Western Sahara, as you've seen the letter, I can confirm that we've received the letter from Morocco alleging violations of the ceasefire and related agreements in Western Sahara. As you know, there is an established procedure for assessing such allegations by either party undertaken by the UN mission on the ground based on the impartial monitoring and observation functions of our colleagues in Western Sahara. The UN mission, MINURSO, was present at both of these alleged incidents and did not observe anything amounting to a violation under the terms of the applicable agreements. Incidents or issues which are identified as being violations of the applicable agreements are shared with the parties for their immediate action, a process which has been effective in preventing conflict and maintaining the ceasefire since its inception. Such violations are also reported to the Security Council as part of the mission's normal reporting procedures. Let's go to a different place in the world.
Actually, not so much. I have a follow-up on Syria.
Ah, okay.
So it's been reported today that the U.S. began some level of withdrawal from Syria. So due to these reports, could you remind us first, what's the view of the SG on the importance on keeping the fight against terrorism and whether or not the ESG believes that the withdrawal of the U.S. poses a risk to the overall goals that the U.N. has set on fighting terrorism?
No, I'm not going to comment on reports of a U.S. military withdrawal. We're not briefed or informed. Our focus remains the work of Mr. Pedersen, you need to get used to that, the work of Mr. Pedersen in his lead to try to get a political settlement. As you saw, he's already deep into it, meeting with various stakeholders. As for the fight against terrorism, our position has always been that the fight against terrorism needs to take into full respect the protection of civilians and international humanitarian and human rights law. Mr. Klein.
Yes, I want to go back to the Congo. I know you've indicated that the UN is not in a position to comment on the fairness of the election. But at the Security Council meeting today, Belgium and I believe some other members have suggested that there be a detailed release down to the precinct level of the voting tallies, comparisons with the National Episcopalian Conference tallies. Does the Secretary General have any comment on the issue of transparency and whether does he believe that suggestion of detailed release and analysis and comparisons of the different voting tallies should take place?
Look, I think I've used quite a few words on our position on the election. We're not going to dictate to the Congolese authorities. It's a Congolese own process. What is important is that calm prevail and that the established constitutional and legal procedures be followed. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Stefan. Can you confirm, with regard to Palestine, can you confirm that the Secretary General will meet President Abbas when he visits New York next week?
Yes, he will be meeting with Mr. Abbas. Masoud, I'm sorry.
Stefan, does the Secretary General agree with what his special envoy has said about North Korea, that it's a prison without walls and so forth? And that press conference was widely reported and reported from
Seoul. I'm not aware of the Secretary General having a special envoy on North Korea.
No, this Human United Nations Human Rights Envoy who was supposed to visit
the special rapporteur, on human rights in North Korea has a specific mandate. You know, special rapporteurs operate outside of the control of the Secretary General. They work for the Human Rights Council. It's not for us to comment on what they say. What is important is that the Secretary General has expressed in the past his concern for the human rights situation in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. And he has, as a matter of principle, he encourages all countries to cooperate fully with all the special procedures of the Human Rights Council.
But does the Secretary General necessarily agree or not agree with this?
I think I've tried to the best of my English-speaking ability to answer your question.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.